You don't need the spotlight to shine. That's the secret that most successful people already know. And that's what we'll be talking about in today's Speak and Get What You Want podcast here with Francis Jones. And Francis, we got the great Tim Schur with us today.
Oh, it's so amazing. I've never been on a blind date before, but when we met Tim, it was like a blind date. We were at a Dave Ramsey event, and Dave Ramsey's people said, hey, you got to meet this guy, Tim. Now they're like, okay. And it was a fast friendship, took off from there. It's fantastic. It's so great to have you here, Tim.
I didn't know if I was if people were seeing my video yet, but I'm just listening to you guys talk about me from behind the scenes, and it just makes me so happy. I wanted to interject like four times. You know, it's like, guys, we're all here. This is so exciting. I love you both so much.
I love it, Tim.
I couldn't be more happy to be sitting here and chat with you
guys.
Well,
and to Francis's point, Francis, when you go to a Dave Ramsey event, a lot of people want to meet Dave Ramsey, but his team was like, listen, you need to go over there and meet Tim Schur. And so, Tim, it is fantastic to be with you. And I love what we're going to be talking about here for a few minutes today, with really people wanting to lead and have impact, but yet so many people think that they need to have the spotlight in order to do that. And that's something you teach real powerfully.
Yeah, there's a guy I've been really inspired by, and his name's Michael Collins. And his story's a unique one. So most people know Apollo 11, right? Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. But what most people don't know, there was a third astronaut on that mission. And it's this guy, Michael Collins. So Michael's job is he actually Ubers Neil and Buzz to the moon. So he gets them all the way there, drops them off, so they can do all the stuff that they have to do on the moon's surface. He stays in the command module and orbits the moon 26 times until those guys are ready to be picked up and brought back to Earth. He went through the same training as they did, made it all the way to the moon. He did not get to walk on the moon. And so you would think that when Michael gets back to Earth and everybody's sitting down with the press, it would have been so like human and natural of him to say something like, well, it sure would have been nice to actually walk on the moon. But what I love about this guy is that's not at all how he talked about it. In fact, he talked about how content he was to have had one of those three seats.
Wow.
And it's interesting to me in the world that we are living in today. You know, when people think about, you know, what makes a successful person, it's often things like fame, money, power. Like these are the markers of success. But when I look at a guy like Michael, he's just kind of going in the opposite direction. And that's very interesting to me, because I think for his story, the question he's asking, and the one that all of us, I think, can ask as well, is, do you need to walk on the moon to be happy? Do you need these markers of success for your life to matter? And so, you know, somebody like Michael is more of a person that I want to try to model my life after, because I think he's onto something. It just didn't seem like he defined success by the ways that a lot of people would look at it and think about it.
Well, and Tim, in this Instagram social media world, everyone perceives that, oh, walking on the moon, that's where I've got to be. That's where I have to, in order to enjoy success. So how does somebody approach it and be comfortable being Michael?
Yeah, I don't think that you one day wake up and that's who you are, because the natural part in all of us is to be selfish. Like our default mode is to think about ourselves.
Right.
So to not do that, to learn to be content in a moment like that takes a lot of work. And so there's baby steps that you take to get into that space. One person that I also think models this really well, and it kind of comes with a very practical thing, a baby step that we all can take to kind of move us in this direction. So I worked at Apple for 3 years. Before I met you guys and I was working with Don and StoryBrain and that whole crew, I actually worked at Apple. And Steve Jobs, the CEO, right when I first started working, But then Steve Jobs passes away. The person who takes over is Tim Cook. And so at the first big announcement of a new product, you know how they do those huge keynotes where they're, you know, unveiling the new thing. After the release of the Apple Watch, Tim is being interviewed on national television. And David Muir asks him, is this the moment for you, the moment of your career at Apple? And Tim, without hesitating, says, well, it's a moment for Apple. I don't think about myself that much.
Wow.
And that, to me, is a similar thing to Michael Collins, where he's done the work to not use that as a moment to make it about him. Because if I'm Tim Cook in that moment, I'm probably wanting to use that moment to, you know, as an opportunity to let everybody know I'm the man for the job. Like, I can take Apple into this next era. And yet he doesn't take the bait, you know? It's a moment for Apple. I don't think about myself that much. And his response reminds me a lot of this plaque. I actually have a copy of this plaque too. But this is what sat on Ronald Reagan's desk when he was president. It says, there is no limit to what a man can do or where he can go if he doesn't mind who gets the credit. So how do we show up like a Michael Collins, content in your role? How do you show up like a Tim Cook, where when the actual spotlight is on you, how do you not take the bait and make it all about you? Well, I think you the next time you're in a situation where somebody's trying to make you the hero, what if you actually flip the script and use it as an opportunity to shine the spotlight on other people? Do you need the credit for every idea? Or are you comfortable in that meeting say, oh, hey, thanks, that's actually not my idea. That one was Francis's idea, right?
Right.
Like, those are the kinds of leaders, those are the kinds of people that I find myself wanting to be around more so than if they were showing up in a different way.
So good. You know, I'm a huge baseball fan, and like most baseball fans, I hate the Dodgers. Just kidding. But we're, you know, not to date us, but the World Series just happened a couple of days ago, 18 innings, you know, and everybody remembers Freddie Freeman hits the home run in the 18th inning to win the game. And when they went to interview him, they dumped water on his head. She said, how does it feel to hit the home run? He's like, my home run doesn't matter if Will Klein doesn't pitch four scoreless innings.
That's right.
Will Klein, who wasn't even on the roster before the World Series, he was a guy that never pitched more than two innings in his entire life in the big leagues. He'd never pitched more than two innings. So Freddie Freeman, the hero of the night, the first thing he said was, it's all about Will Klein, not about me. And Freddie Freeman is universally lauded as one of the greatest guys in the Major League Baseball. Not great. He is a great player, but he is like, you can't hate Freddie Freeman. You can't hate him. I hate the Dodgers, but I don't hate Freddie Freeman. Mm-hmm. And it's because of that. It's because Freddie Freeman doesn't care about getting the credit. He cares about making sure his teammates feel appreciated. And that example, like, it really resonated with me.
Well, but it's so hard though. It's so hard because here you are being interviewed and this is your moment. And Tim, to your point with Tim Cook, you know, the younger listeners perhaps don't remember when Steve Jobs did these reveals, they were like presentations that were shown forever. Like, he nailed it. And it was like, oh my goodness. Every time he did it, it was another video that people would watch over and over and over again. And now Tim Cook's being placed in that spot. And Francis, your point, Freddie Freeman, it's really hard to just be like, yeah, you know, I am that good, right? And to really soak it up. But when, and speaking to Francis, the example you just gave, when Freddie Freeman did that, I was watching that. I was like, okay, I love that guy. I love that individual.
It's health. Like, we're just drawn to people that are really healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, man, there's something that just seems so pure and human about that. And I think it's an aspirational identity that it's like, man, we actually want to have answered like that. And yet sometimes myself included, feel a gap between being that person. It's like, gosh, I am very self-centered and I want to be more humble like that guy. And so those are the kinds of leaders I think that people are attracted to. And, you know, when I was 21, I moved to Nashville and I had this big dream of being the next John Mayer. And I wish I could tell you that I had the best of intentions and I had a very pure heart in, you know, my pursuit and wanting to do this. I just wanted to be famous. That was it, right? And there's something that you have to learn, I think, as you get older and hopefully you mature into realizing that life is not about you. And so I've been on this journey since that time to try to show up a little bit differently, because that is actually what culture celebrates. It's the person in the spotlight. And so I remember going to a show at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville. It's one of my favorite places to watch shows. And the lead singer was playing guitar, standing in the center of the stage. And a few songs later, the lead singer goes back to play the piano and he has to take a few steps back. And for just a moment, the person running the main spotlight lost him. I mean, everyone in the crowd knew what was going on, because like the actual spotlight was doing figure eights, like trying to find the singer. And the lead singer's like, hey, got to stay with me, bro. And, you know, everyone laughs and, you know, kind of the show goes on. But I thought, isn't it interesting that if that guy running the spotlight was doing his job with excellence, he actually becomes invisible. Mm. And I think that's true for all of us. When we are at our best in our roles, the byproduct is actually that we become invisible. We're doing our role so well, no one's even noticing.
Yeah.
And yet there's something in us as humans where we want to be seen and valued. You know, so what do we do about that? Like, what do you do on a day where you're not feeling appreciated? When everything in you wants to just scream for attention, like, notice me, I'm doing a great job. Like, how do we show up on that day? Yeah. When maybe you've like poured it all out for a customer and you're just like, nobody seems to care that I'm working so hard. Like, what do you do on that day? And, so there's this study I remember hearing about from The Power of Moments. And this guy, Dan Heath, it's in his book. They surveyed a group of leaders and said, do you frequently recognize your teammates and, you know, and give them credit for the work that they do? Like, give them these bits of recognition. And 80% of these leaders said that they do that. And then they interviewed the direct reports and said, how many of you feel, you know, frequently recognized and appreciated by your boss? And only 20% of them said that, you know, yes, my leader does that. Wow. So they talked about this recognition gap, like that 20% to the 80%. It's not because leaders are like horrible people, most of them. It's just because like we think that we're doing a better job, and yet, you know, we're working in these environments where the people that are working to our left and to our right, they don't feel, you know, appreciated, recognized. So one thing that I am always trying to do a better job of is to keep us from getting into that unhealthy headspace where we have to be the one like screaming for attention. How can we just very simply recognize the people that show up each and every day? There's this like calming nature across the entire organization when people feel appreciated and recognized. It's so simple, but the note, the like one sentence email to the person, just letting them know what they did for that customer, that was amazing. Like, that sticks with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what I found is that a lot of times it's not ideal to do it for this reason, but a lot of times they reciprocate. Mm-hmm. And so now you can sense when someone's doing it to get that back. But I try my very best whenever possible when I'm speaking to a group about a team effort to talk about the we, that we did this and we did that and we accomplished this. And I even had a leader once say to me, hey, listen, you can't do that. You have to make sure that you say you, because if you give credit to everyone else, they're not going to know that it was you. And then you're not going to get the credit and the raise and the promotion. I'm like, then my boss doesn't know me very well. And so if they can't recognize my contribution to it without me pointing it out to them saying I did this. So I really try and focus on the we when I'm doing those kinds of things and acknowledge my teammates, like you mentioned. And that's what's really worked well for me, at least mentally. I'm not saying I always get the promotion or the raise, but it helps me to not have to to live in the space of, well, I didn't get credit for X. Well, I didn't ask for credit because I said it was we. So how can I get upset when they don't point
to me? Well, and Francis, you and I know Tim well. And when he was sharing that story there about showing up in Nashville at 21, wanting to be famous, I sat back and thought, wait, what? I don't know that side of Tim, because the only side of Tim I've seen is the one that's always out there trying to help others get famous, help others succeed. So what happened, Tim, in the time that you showed up at age 21 to the time you met Francis and I, because that wasn't the person you were not seeking the spotlight when you were trying to help others be successful, which is why Francis and I just thought, wow, this is a powerful leader.
Well, I failed. I don't have a guitar. I'm not going to play you guys any songs. You know, I was reading this book at the time, and the book had a line. It's like a marketing book, but I was applying it to my own situation. It said, are you demanding or attracting attention?
Mm. That's a great question.
And I felt that in my product, the product that I was selling, creating as a musician, I was trying so hard. And the customers, the listeners, were not resonating with it. And I thought that was a very helpful thing to realize, is like I was demanding attention. And yet I had some peers who everything they seemed to do was just effortless. Hmm. So I started to notice, what are the areas in my life that's a little more effortless? Because I'm trying, it's not working. And in me trying to learn how to be a better musician, I started tour managing for other musicians to be like, okay, hey, this is my, I'm good at operations, logistics. So let me come alongside and help organize tours, allow the artist to, you know, not have to worry about any of those things. They go do their art really well. But I had this amazing opportunity. I'm on the bus with them. So I got to see what that next level musician looks like. But along the way, I saw, oh, this operations, logistics, being in a supporting role, I like that. That's, I still get to feel a part of this creative industry, and but I don't have to be the one singing to feel that. And so I went on this journey of stepping into more of those kinds of opportunities, and saw that the further and further I got away from the spotlight, the more and more fulfilled I felt in my work.
Wow.
I was no longer demanding attention. And in fact, it was the opposite. People were calling me to help do those kinds of things. And one of the biggest breaks of my career was getting asked by Donald Miller to work alongside him. And at the time, it was Don writing books. This was pre-StoryBrand and all this. It was Don writing books, speaking. He had a conference. So I was employee number one.
Okay, but how did your paths cross?
Some of the musicians that I was tour managing for, he knew one of those guys, and I met Don through that. And then I was managing another author who spoke at one of Don's conferences. So we had another interaction. And because I was helping my author prepare for this time on the main stage, I had the opportunity to work with Don and his team. And so he got to see kind of that side of how I showed up and learned, actually, at that conference, that Don was looking for somebody to help him kind of launch this new season and start a business. And but that never would have happened if I would have kept banging the drum and just like trying to get a bunch of attention and try to get people to listen to my songs on MySpace. That wasn't working.
You know, that is so powerful. Like I can't, like we could spend hours just talking about a couple of those things, but I really like that idea that once you kind of turn yourself over to that, and I really like the demand versus attract, right? Yeah. Once you shift from the demand to attract, once you become that person that attracts, it's interesting that those opportunities just kind of magically appear.
That's right.
Because people are attracted, they want to bring you in versus the demand. of like, I demand that this happen. I'm going to keep banging my head. And so that really powerful, really.
Yeah. But the phrase that he really used there that I loved was effortless. What was I doing that was effortless? And meaning that what came naturally for you, but it also, Tim, it also comes back to your ability to also be self-aware. You are being, and that's one of those characteristics that people just, it's not talked about enough. Just really work on being self-aware, because we see people that are successful that aren't self-aware, right? And we're like, well, that guy just kept pounding the drum. And eventually he got there. And have the confidence to pivot. Where does that come from, Tim?
Well, I think there's some discernment around, you know, when do you just keep knocking on the door and when do you like go find another door? You know, and for me personally, I ask God in a lot of ways to help direct the paths that I go down, you know, and I think the way that I see kind of life in partnership with God in that way is, you know, I don't think God's just sitting around, you know, I don't think that the path is, I just sit around and wait for God to open all these doors. Sometimes you have to take the first step and do the banging, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think that I've tried to listen to the voice of God and learn and for my own life and use wisdom and discernment in those moments to know when is the path to pivot versus when do you stick in this and be tenacious. So it's hard to give a prescriptive thing for everyone listening. You kind of have to figure that out for yourself. But for me, I just started to see more and more opportunities, more doors opening, if you will, around this path of kind of being that operations logistics. And I just like took steps and then realized like, oh, wow, I'm like full of joy. This makes me happy. And, you know, I've been reading this book by this guy named Jamie Winship. And it's called Living Fearless. And, you know, he talks about how people run into trouble when they're not operating or living out of their true identity. And I think for me, I was like trying to live out this other identity when my true identity, who I want to be and how I am living now, is I love being in that supporting role. And so I just have found for me a lot of that momentum, the more times I put myself in that seat. And what's interesting is I have a CEO title right now. Like I am the CEO of a nonprofit. But I actually don't see myself as now everyone now serve me. I just think, yeah, I happen to have a CEO title, but I look at it like I am here to help this entire team serve our customer and all the people that we're trying to help. So I think that sometimes people get it wrong in that thinking that the spotlight is the problem. When the spotlight is actually not the problem. We need the person standing in the center of the stage for the whole thing to work. What gets in people's way is when they believe that, you know, they are the only one role that matters. I think if you're in the center and you're like, you know, everyone look at me, this is all about me, I think that's where people run into problems. But another is when you kind of start drinking your own Kool-Aid, that's also problematic. But I just think it's valuing the whole. It's like Michael Collins. You got to have people who are content sitting in that seat, even though they're not the Neil or the Buzz. Like every role matters. And if we can be the kinds of people who show up and are always looking at success as helping others win, that is the goal. Helping others win is the path. I don't care if you're in a supporting role or as a CEO of a company, if everybody shows up to help others win, we are all going to be in a better place.
Yeah, I love
that. And it goes back to that quote, Francis, you and I have talked about frequently, is you can have anything in this world you want if you help enough people get what they want. Mm-hmm. Right. And Tim, as we wrap up, I just want to really emphasize that point that you made on identity, right? Mm-hmm. When you are comfortable with your identity, then it makes other people comfortable around you. And so as people are listening to this podcast, we really need to become at peace with who we are. And I love that you know, you bring up the fact that you have a strong belief in God and your identity. And I certainly don't want to put words in your mouth, but in Francis and I believe, you know, we are children of God. And so he's given all of us characteristics that and abilities to go succeed. Find out what those characteristics are. Go find out what your talents and abilities are. And when you're true to that and you're true to yourself, you'll be amazed at what you can accomplish.
And the fact about self-awareness too, something that I'm constantly looking at is, if I wouldn't have failed as a musician, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. But I get into those situations like, this isn't working. It's like, God, what do you want me to know?
Right.
How can I learn from this thing? And then, you know, in those moments, you realize, oh, well, hey, maybe there's something to this fact that you're really good at the logistics and operations thing. What if you, like, dabbled with that? Like, how's that working? Oh, my gosh, this is working better. You know, so I just feel like I'm constantly looking at things that are happening in my life, trying to learn from even the times where things aren't going right, because even these failures that we come up against have, you know, the opportunity to be some of the greatest blessings. If I would have become successful, I would have been miserable as a musician, because my head, I was not ready for that.
Right.
That is one of, like, the greatest gifts that God has given me, is like, that didn't work because I was in such an unhealthy headspace. I have been able to learn over the last 15 years. Now I have a CEO title and I don't like have a big head about it. I'm actually in the right headspace to take this role on. So sometimes the learning is also that mental, like, getting those reps in to you know, give credit to somebody else, to, you know, be comfortable, you know, recognizing people and letting them be the one to get the credit for the idea and, you know, to give them the shout out rather than, like, the constant need to have that ourselves. These are things that you have to learn and get the reps in that hopefully then will prepare you for that next opportunity, because you're getting more and more healthy. You're heading in the path that you should truly be heading down. But I just believe this for my life, and I would say that this is pretty prescriptive for everyone. If you will show up in your life and start to look at success as helping others win, I just believe that is going to put you down a much better path than the other way of living. Success is not fame and money and power. Like, there are other ways to look at success. You know, like, don't get head faked just by all this noise. Like, turn down the noise and start to ask, like, what in my life, what is success? And I think that the more that we can do that and, you know, try to show up to serve others, I just think that will not only help you have a better headspace, but I do believe that's how you make an even greater impact in, you know, the sphere, the circle that you're in. That's the area of influence. And I think if we're helping people, that's a good spot to be.
So good. So
good.
I love
it. I love it. Tim, we're going to have to do this again. In fact, I'm going to entice you to come back again by letting you know that Francis started his career in a boy band called Eight Man Out. And so he was in the boy band, and they
acapella. Acapella, baby. We even had a cassette.
They did. So I have this. I still to this day have one of your cassette tapes, Francis.
Oh, you do? I don't even have a
Anyway, Tim, we're going to do this again. Love what you shared. Love the content, the information. So, so powerful. Thanks for being with us, Tim.
Absolutely. Love you guys. Thanks, you're the best.
Take care. Bye now.